Welcome to this week's edition of Focus Fridays, and Focus Fridays is being brought to you by Hobrins Insurance, Home Siding, Rohde's IGA, Millersburg Electric, Pomerene Hospital, MRV Siding, and Millersburg Tire. I'm Melissa Patrick with Focus Fridays, and today I have with me Holmes County Common Pleas Court Judge Sean Warner. Well, thank you for joining in with us, Sean, and we're so glad to be learning about the Common Pleas Court today and how it works, as you've been in it for quite a while now.
Yeah, well, it seems that way. Coming up actually to the end of my first term, starting in January, will be the beginning of my sixth year. And that's the beauty of being a judge as opposed to, say, prosecuting attorney or other elected officials. You got to run every 4 years. Judge, you get a little more breathing room. You get, you know, those extra two. So I'm currently circulating my petition, but I took the bench February of 2021. So it's been a little bit of a journey.
It has been. And so did you always want to become a judge, or is it something that just the opportunity presented itself?
That's an interesting question. I would love to project the image that I planned my life very carefully and always knew what I wanted to do. But I was actually about to graduate college with a history degree after starting going for engineering and not knowing what I would do with that. So I thought I'll spend more money in law school and figure it out while I'm there. And really the only thought I had coming out of law school was I got to repay all these loans now. So I need to make some money, which landed me back here in Holmes County working for Critchfield Law Firm for 8 years before I got to really taste my calling. I always wanted to be in the courtroom, being an advocate, and working at the prosecuting attorney's office was just, it suited me so well. And I got to do those things. And that then obviously led to the opportunity to become, you know, prosecuting attorney and then judge.
So this wasn't always like, oh, I want to be a lawyer from the time you were in school and throughout. So
no, I wanted to be a rock star or a professional athlete, or, you know, all the practical things that we all grow up thinking.
Right.
That,
like, oh yeah, I could go in, make a bunch of money. Boom.
Yeah. That and yeah, money for nothing and the chicks for free. But no, they didn't work out that way. Fortunately, you know, I was in college in Boston, very far from Holmes County. Now that part was by design. You know, I was, you know, going to go out and see the world, kind of like George Bailey and, you know, It's a Wonderful Life, had all these big plans. And then in a very serendipitous way, you know, that, you know, God has for us, met my wife and, you know, chased her to Columbus and finished, you know, a proud Buckeye and stayed there for law school. And the rest of it was, I've got a family to raise, I got bills to pay, and I better start working.
And so you said you were at Critchfield for 8 years.
That's
then.
Right.
And then is that when you made the move to the prosecutor's office?
Yeah, fortunately, they're right next door to each other. The buildings actually connect. So I had the good fortune of Critchfield offering me a job out of law school. I know you've had Matt Music on here, and he sort of went through how the bar exam works. You know, there's that limbo. You take it in July, you got to wait till November to find out if you, in fact, pass. And I did. I clerked at Critchfield, and I was working there when I found out I passed. And I worked with, you know, great people, and most of them are still there. And it wasn't so much my dissatisfaction with who I was working with. It was, I'm practicing law, but I'm behind a desk. I'm doing litigation, but I'm just filing a lot of paper. I'm not in the courtroom persuading minds and hearts. And when Bob Renfrey became judge, he left the prosecuting attorney's office to do that. I took the spot that he vacated, worked for Steve Noling for from 2010 to when I became prosecutor in 2017.
Once you finally made that decision, you've kind of worked your way up through, and what made you want to go from prosecutor to judge?
That was, well, Bob was retiring, and so I was already prosecuting attorney at that time. You know, it wasn't working for anybody. You know, I had staff, and really the concern for me, especially because my assignment at the prosecutor's office, among other things, was, you know, a healthy felony docket. And you don't want to leave that to somebody who hasn't had any criminal law experience. In Holmes County, being a small bar, there weren't a lot of people that were considering running. So I didn't want to be making my arguments to somebody who was, you know, didn't know how the criminal law works. So I felt compelled that, you know, there should be somebody with that background.
Now, to run for an office of a judge, do you, and it's specifically common pleas, I don't know if the judges are different, but do you have to have certain requirements for you to run?
Yes, you do. So any elected official, you got to be a resident of the county for, you know, a certain period of time. For judges, you have to have practiced law for 6 years or worked at, there, you know, statutes, they're not short. There's like five other circumstances that you can become a judge, but it generally requires that you've been practicing law or working in a law-related field. Other than that, it's pretty much the same as every other county elected official. You know, you need X number of signatures. Yeah, you need to live in the county. And judges, the only additional requirement is got to have be able to practice law and have practiced it for approximately 6 years.
Is it a little intimidating, like having to go up for vote every 6 years now that you're coming into your next round of being on the ballot?
Yeah, there's always
knowing like, hey, I'm doing all of this. How is that going to affect my vote?
Yeah, there is that. It's always in the background. There's a little bit of angst because, you know, once you've gotten a job and essentially you're, you know, your own boss, if you just keep doing the job, make it to retirement and that's it. Whereas elected officials, they've got that either every 4 years or every 6 years, you're up for public approval again. And I don't let it really seep into the day-to-day decisions on any particular case, but there is that pressure. I want to do it right. I don't want to give somebody a reason to run against me that, you know, hey, this guy's not doing his job. You just want to do the job right every day. And I think getting elected helps add that motivation that you keep your eye on what you're supposed to be doing.
And that seems like a good place because we're going to be diving in to see what it is that you do as a judge. Everybody thinks you just sit on the bench and bang your gavel, but there's a lot more to it, I'm sure. So we'll be back in the next segment. This is Holmes County Common Pleas Court Judge Sean Warner for WKLM. I'm Melissa Patrick. We are back here with Holmes County Common Pleas Judge Sean Warner, and I'm Melissa Patrick for WKLM. We started learning about who you are and how you got into the position, and now let's kind of step into the courtroom where you're not really there all that much because there's more that you do as a judge besides being on the bench.
Yeah, it's funny. I think before the break, you mentioned going to find out what I do beside banging the gavel. I've never actually banged a gavel in the 5 years that I've been judged.
Do you have a gavel?
There's one sitting right there on the bench.
I'm going to need you next one. You need to bang the gavel.
I did have a guy shouting every obscenity in the book at me, and I was tempted to get it, but he was being escorted out at the time, so I didn't think.
I still would have done it.
Yeah, the gavel, I didn't know it was going to really add anything other than drama, so, and I'm not a fan of drama. Yeah. It's funny you mentioned the difference between being on the bench and not, and I'll get into it in 1 second, what I do off the bench. But being on the bench, you're aware that you're on the record. You know, that's how I start every hearing. We're on the record in case number, whatever it is. So I want that record to be clean, and I want it to be full of reason, not emotion. And we deal with some very emotional, very
high tense emotions.
Yeah, very tense things for people who have been through some serious trauma. Every time there's a verdict or there's a sentence, somebody is upset. Either the victim's upset, it's not enough, or the family of the defendant is upset because it's too harsh. I always warn people before those announcements, I'll not tolerate any outbursts. If you need to do that, I understand, but you got to go out in the hall because this is a court of law and we are on the record. And I want that to be able to be heard and listen to the principles that we're applying, and we're not getting into a soap opera. That's, you know, it's not what we do. We're not a telenovela.
The same thing.
Yeah. I have a wife and two daughters, so Jane the Virgin playing on a continuous loop for a long time in my house. So, and I have to find other things to do during that time because it's just not my cup of tea. But going back to your original question about being on the bench and you know, doing other work, if you were to look at a year of, you know, being a judge, there's a lot more time spent off the bench than on it. You know, we have, as I mentioned today, this afternoon, there'll be 5 pretrials. On those, if somebody's going to plead, then we go on the record. So there'll be a stream and people will know what we're doing. A lot of times, there is no agreement yet. The guy's not ready to plead. The prosecutor's not going to give in to his demands or vice versa. So we set another pretrial and we come back and we have a lot of long discussions in chambers between, you know, counsel for the state, counsel for a defendant, or in a civil context, counsel for the plaintiff, counsel for defendant. So there's a lot of time talking about the case before there's some resolution or there's a trial. And in addition to that, there's just a lot of orders I sign that aren't really, you know, tied to litigation. They're just granting somebody a car title if it, you know, it was lost or destroyed. I have great administrators. I got a, you know, shout out to Tara Gerber and Sherry Smith. They keep me on task. Got, you know, other great, I got my own magistrate. Tiffany Bird is doing a good job. Chief Palmucci, Nick Palmucci is my new chief probation officer. He's doing a fantastic job with that department. So those are all things that ultimately, you know, come to me, you know, personnel decisions, any number of things that a lot of people are working on that has to have my signature on the final product. So there's a lot of desk time, a lot of working with my staff.
And it's always great to have a staff that you can work with well and help keep you on the task. But it just shows that even though you're the judge, there is still a level of needing that assistance around you, because there's more than just making, I mean, obviously you're the only one making the decisions when it comes to the court, but there's a lot that goes with it. There's paperwork and all that jam.
Yeah. And like I said, so many people have to help me. So I honestly, from the time that I've been on the bench, I've always been a big believer that you learn from people who have been doing it ahead of you that you think are doing a good job. So I have the benefit of going to state training and getting to know some other judges and watch what they do. And I honestly think the best judges or any elected official, any leader, should be a humble person. If I walk around and my personality is the judge and not dad and friend and that kind of thing, there's a ring of misery around the person whose ego is really big. So like I say, I'm very fortunate to have the people working for me that do a fantastic job. And I'm very conscious that I want to make their job a good place to work, where they want to come every day.
Well, and you're in such a small county, it's hard to have that ring of arrogance or anything, because you will know how people feel about that.
Yeah. And I'm fortunate enough to, like many of us from this county who were born and raised here, people who have known you since you were nobody. And they don't care that you have a particular title right now. They'll still rib you and remind you
that embarrassing nickname and what you did in sixth grade hallway.
Or that long list of stupid things that you did, yeah, growing up.
But thankfully, we grew up before cell phone video and all that was a thing.
Yeah. I think about that often, because obviously, you know, I've had to, back when I was assistant, we had this, you know, sexting was new and a lot of kids were getting into trouble. And, you know, I worked with Judge Lee at the time to do like diversion programs and try to educate them and give them a consequence, but not, you know, brand them for life. And there's no way that that went away, but I don't see it. I'm upstairs now. I'm terrified for my kids. It's like, if you're going to do something stupid, please don't record it, because it is weekly that I see that happen. And I feel so bad for those kids, because they're never going to be able to delete that. And that was one of the, you know, messages I tried to get out to the young folk. But as you stated, we had the luxury of, you know, no recording when we were young and impulsive. So
maybe a Polaroid somewhere.
Yeah, it might be, but even those fade. Yeah.
You're like, please let them fade.
Yeah, right? Hopefully a lot of sepia-toned stuff of, you know, right. Pictures of stuff I did.
That dark light, like, oh no, that wasn't me. You're mistaken.
Yeah, I had a cousin that looked like me. Yeah.
Well, we're going to learn more about your position and what goes into it as we continue here on Focus Fridays. That's Holmes County Common Pleas Court Judge Sean Warner. For WKLM's Focus Fridays, I'm Melissa Patrick. We are back here on Focus Fridays with Holmes County Common Pleas Court Judge Sean Warner. For Focus Fridays, I'm Melissa Patrick. And Sean, in the last segment, you mentioned something about training. Do you, as a judge, have to take training to maintain your position?
I absolutely do. Every judge has to. In fact, every attorney has to have, they're called CLEs, continuing legal education credits. You have to have a certain number every 2 years. So ever since I've been past the bar that I mentioned before, ever since then, every 2 years I have to have all that training in, and it doesn't change when you're a judge. And part of the reason is the law changes. So you need to be, you know, kept current on not only the law that's already changed, because if you're learning about it then, you're behind. You're already behind.
You're missing something.
Yeah. You need to be apprised of what's coming down the pike and what kind of changes are going to affect your everyday procedure. And that's true for attorneys. It's true for judges. It's true for a lot of professionals, because I worked representing Children's Services. The social workers had the same requirements. They had to, you know, have education credits every, you know, couple of years that they got a report. So it makes sense to keep everybody informed so that they're doing the best that they can do every day.
Now, do they have special ones geared more towards somebody who's a judge versus just an attorney or a prosecutor or what have you? Or are they all generally the same and you all need to have the same things?
No, they're all very different, because just take an attorney, for example. There's so many different being an attorney can mean a lot of different things. You could be purely a patent lawyer, or you could do nothing but workers' comp, or you could do general business litigation, and you're going to be going to different training based on the work that's in front of you. Same thing with judges. When I go, it's all about, you know, sentencing factors. It's about changes in criminal law. It's also changes in civil law and timelines on our dockets. The Supreme Court oversees how quickly you're resolving your cases, and they want everybody, you know, to do them timely. And as you can imagine, some litigation matters are very complex and take a certain amount of time. But the judge, being a judge, and being a common pleas judge, we have our own association, the Ohio Common Pleas Judges Association, and that training is geared specifically toward common pleas judges. There's also Domestic Relations Association. There's also just the Judicial College. That's more generally for any judge. I see, say, Judge Lee and Judge Hyde at that particular training because it's for everyone. Otherwise, we're all going and doing our separate trainings. So it varies based on your position.
How many hours do you have to put in of continuing education each year?
So I report every 2 years. Okay. I believe it's 24, but that also changes. So don't hold me to that. Fortunately, there's the attorney portal to the Supreme Court where I can log on, and it tells me the trainings that I've reported and how many I have left. So I'm always checking.
And shows you what's available. And
yeah, and so even being a common pleas judge, I go to the Ohio Common Pleas Judges Association trainings, but there's also trainings throughout the year offered either by the Supreme Court or other entities on specific subjects. So if I have a case that's a first impression for me, one I haven't had before, I might go to that training. And even more convenient, a lot of those are videos on demand that you can watch. And that's really helpful if you have a case pop up that's in an area that, you know, you haven't had to deal with up to that point.
Well, being such a small county, I'm sure that does happen. You see a lot of the same things, I'm sure, but there's always going to be something like somebody decides to do and be wild and crazy. And you're like, what is this?
Yeah, it's funny you say that because, you know, you don't know what you don't know until you do, until you've come across it. So I did not know before I was common pleas judge, and I spent the bulk of my time as an assistant prosecutor in this very court that I'm a judge for now. I did not know that if you have a problem with how township trustees decided your partition fence dispute with your neighbor, you can appeal that to the common pleas court. So that actually happened to me. I didn't know.
I also did not know that.
I didn't know if you're denied three times by the Industrial Commission or BWC, Bureau of Workers' Comp, that you can then appeal that decision to the Common Pleas Court. So I've had, I can't tell you how many trials about somebody trying to participate and get paid for depression because they sprained their ankle 4 years ago. So I can't stop a jury from coming in. And I've actually apologized to juries after some of these trials. So it's just, you sit in the seat and you find out, hey, everything kind of gets funneled as a last resort. Take it to the Common Pleas Court in that county. And it makes sense because it's put you in the place where the dispute is happening, but it could be anything under the sun that's you're deciding that day.
That's why it's common pleas. It's whatever fits under common.
Yeah. Or maybe I should add UN, the Court of Uncommon Pleas, for all the stuff that we see maybe once in a lifetime. So yeah, maybe I consider it having somebody tack those UN in front of my courtroom door there.
Without specifics, is there one case that was so completely out there that just sticks in your brain?
Because I've been doing it for a good period of time now, no. Because I can sit here and tell stories off the record about really just bizarre. And they usually happen within the criminal realm because
obviously,
that's just where the strangest facts tend to lie. There are unique other things. They're just, a lot of people don't find those stories as interesting because, you know, it's in the civil arena and it's, civil litigation can address wrongs. I mean, people can be traumatized, mm-hmm. you know, car accident or something like that. But at the end of the day, you're figuring out how much money is due for that loss. So it's rather simple and it doesn't make for the mm-hmm. best stories. But, you know, the ones that you're telling, you know, around the campfire are usually in the criminal realm. And I'd love
criminals
to say,
criminals don't always make the best decisions. That's how they become criminals.
Yeah, not only the best, just like they make the most random decision that you wouldn't even consider making. But now that I've done this for years, in my mind, I'm thinking, okay, that one's not going to be topped. But you never know. Tomorrow could be the newest.
And then you're like,
good story.
And you just topped it.
Yeah. I'll bang my gavel at that point. Yeah.
I hope that it is streaming on YouTube. All right. Well, we've got more to learn about the Holmes County Common Pleas Court with Judge Sean Warner. I'm Melissa Patrick for Focus Fridays here on WKLM. We are returning here with Holmes County Common Pleas Court Judge Sean Warner on Focus Fridays. I'm Melissa Patrick with WKLM. And we've kind of done all the information around the ring of being judge, but now let's dig into the heart of being judge, and that's the part where you're sitting on the bench hearing cases. What goes into each part of your job as judge as these cases are presented to you? I know there's the steps. We talked about those with prosecuting attorney Matt Music, but as a judge, what are you looking for as you go through the steps, and how are you kind of taking everything in through each steps when it comes towards sentencing? How does that all come together for you?
It's an interesting question, and it's something obviously I think about every day, and it's hard to quantify because there's so much difference between criminal and civil. And then aside from that, there's a huge disparity, and I've decided all of these cases from a felony of the fifth degree theft up to murder. There's a whole lot of difference in between those things, both on the severity of the crime, but then each defendant, you're dealing with someone who is fighting against either a lack of education or a mental health problem that's being unaddressed. So ultimately, the end of the day, and I'm going to focus on criminal because it's quite frankly more interesting than the civil stuff that I do. Civil stuff's important, but people are more interested in the criminal stuff I can tell by what they tune into, because
right.
nobody gets on the stream for my civil stuff. So my weekly schedule is consumed more by the criminal docket. Going in your question about, you know, how do I make a decision? A grand jury has already decided there's probable cause that this person should stand trial for one or more felonies. So I'm dealing with that. The end goal of every single defendant is to rehabilitate them so that, you know, when they're at the end of this process, they're way less likely to offend again. And that then in turn leads to a safer community. So you're under this umbrella of community safety and rehabilitating the individual. Sometimes after the first and second strike, you realize this individual's never going to get it. And at that point, it's incarceration, because they're not going to take to the programming. They've already demonstrated repeatedly they're not interested in it. So it's sort of a continuum. And the first time I get a young person in there that maybe stole something, that to steal at least $1,000 from Walmart, I'm going to be heavy.
This day and age, that's not hard.
Yeah, exactly right. There's a lot of big ticket items. So obviously, the first time I see this person, I haven't seen them before, I'm going to put them on community control. I'm going to make sure they get services. We're going to give them some education. Now, if they violate the law again, or they violate conditions of community control, they'll sit in jail for a little bit. You know, you got to turn up the consequences to try to correct the behavior. So it's kind of always under that umbrella, but it varies so much from person to person. The person in front of me, like I said, it could be as simple as they're just a jerk. There are those. I mean, we all know this. We're all human beings. We you know, deal with other people in our community. Sometimes the person's just a jerk, and there's not a whole lot you can do to fix that. Sometimes this person's processing a very serious trauma that the rest of us have no clue how we would even get through that. And that's when, you know, you try heavy, you know, counseling, therapies, and everything. And I'm rooting for that person. And at the same time, I'm thinking to myself, I don't know if I could come through the other side of that and function normally. And I'm rooting for these people, because at the end of the day, maybe you've seen it on the stream or maybe you haven't. We had this thing called intervention in lieu of conviction, mm-hmm. where certain offenses and certain offenders are eligible to have the case dismissed if they go to counseling, therapy, and maintain sobriety for a period of a year. And you'll hear me on the stream tell people that I thank them when they complete it successfully, because so few do. Despite the opportunity to have a felony dismissed from your record, people simply won't do what's required for a period of 1 year. And then there are the people who treat it as the gift that it is, and it makes everyone in the room, the defense attorney, the prosecutor, me as judge, glad we do what we do, because this person's made a change and it has improved their life. And that is so gratifying, but it happens so not very often at all. It's extremely rare. So I try to make sure I really applaud people that want to change. But then on the other end of the spectrum, those that don't, it ends up just being probably lengthy prison terms, because usually the severity of their crimes increases too as it, you know, time goes on. But
and if they're not going to complete their year, they probably did something to break their probation or whatever to not be that year. So now they're dealing again. It has to sometimes be disheartening to see the same person coming through, especially when you have hope for them. You're like, oh, I think they've got it this time. And then they're back in the courtroom and it's like, oh no.
Yeah. And that's something that I think people may not understand. I guess I've talked to people that are interested in the power that comes with this particular position, that, you know, you can send people away for a long time. It's like, I lose sleep over that. Even when it's warranted, and even though I have no doubt in my mind that that was the correct legal decision to make, as a human being, I don't take any joy in sending somebody to prison. There was a guy a couple weeks ago, known him most of my life, was a couple years behind me in school, and I've seen him before, and, you know, it's, you want him to do better, but, you know, he made some bad decisions and, you know, did something that there's just a mandatory sentence. Not the amount of time I sent him for it, but whatever sentence I impose is mandatory. And it just, he had to go. I had to send him, but it just is really a bummer because, you know, his family in this community, but what he was doing is dangerous and it also threatens the safety of this community. So you have to do it. And none of those things are fun. I mentioned, I don't know if we were even on the record here. You got to have thick skin to do this job. And again, any position of leadership, because you got to be more concerned with doing what's legally correct and what's right under the law than what's easy or what feels good. So,
and let's dive more into making those decisions with your parameters you're given from the ORC and everything here in our next segment. That's Holmes County Common Pleas Court Judge Sean Warner. I'm Melissa Patrick with Focus Fridays on WKLM. And we are coming back here to continue our discussion with Holmes County Common Pleas Court Judge Sean Warner. And I'm Melissa Patrick for Focus Fridays. And we started discussing about how you make your decisions in sentencing in the last segment. And the ORC gives you some parameters, but you have some leeway in certain situations. How do you go about with your sentencing and making those decisions?
It's an interesting question because it's changing. First of all, judges used to have a lot more discretion, especially when it comes to criminal sentencing, than they do now. So many of the crimes have been, you know, built into as a, for instance, murder. You know, you would think that based on the facts, whether there was, you know, an argument or that kind of thing, I would have a huge range to impose, but it's not. Like, we had one murder since I was on the bench, and it happened very early on. When he pled guilty, I simply imposed the 25 to life because that is the sentence, period. But otherwise, the revised code generally gives you a range. For instance, by felony of the fifth degree, you can only get up to 12 months in prison, fourth degree, 18 months, and it goes up from there. So I have that as far as sentencing, but there's also deciding, you know, if there's a motion to suppress or that kind of thing. There's precedent. There's other cases. There's case law that either from the 5th District, which is the district we're in, or from the Ohio Supreme Court. If there's nothing there, then there's, you know, federal cases. So there's a lot of different sources of law that maybe people don't understand. The Ohio Revised Code is our state code. Our Constitution, our Ohio Constitution, and our federal Constitution are very short. So you would think that we're living in a country of very few laws, but those are the overarching principles. You know, your Fifth Amendment rights, they always refer to somewhere between the Fourth and the Sixth Amendment. You could hang the Constitution on the wall and be a nice wall hanging. It's very short and easy to read. But then there's, you know, 99 titles and chapters of the revised code, of the U.S. code, that our lives are actually way more regulated. I didn't even mention the administrative code, and that fills in the cracks that the revised code missed. So there are volumes and volumes on my wall that I don't read, because I read everything online now, that govern our lives. So there's that to help decide a sentence. Outside of that, I mean, it's kind of general. If this is the first time they're before me for, let's say, a fifth degree theft, as I mentioned, you know, you try to be consistent, try to give them community control with services and help, you know, improve their decision making, help improve their education. A lot of these people never graduated high school. You know, part of the aim then would be to get their GED or to get them, you know, service counseling and services to help them improve. Then outside of that, I have the arguments of the attorneys, you know, defense and prosecution, or, you know, plaintiff, defendant. They're trying to persuade me, you know, one way or the other. And an interesting part of the process is it's hard for, in a criminal context, a prosecutor and a defense attorney to reach a plea deal if they're not sure that the judge is at least going to be in the ballpark. So many times they'll say, hey, we're thinking this. Do you approve of it? And my standard answer is yes, subject to the pre-sentence investigation. And that's where my probation department tells me about this person, because them coming into my courtroom for a 10-minute hearing doesn't really give me much insight into their life. So they ask them about their upbringing, their life experiences, you know, substance abuse problems, trauma. Then they list their criminal record, so I know how many times this person's been in my court or other courts. So there are times where, after reading the pre-sentence investigation, I'll tell them before sentencing, hey, sorry, I know I said I'd be in agreement with this general range, but it's going to be way more, because I didn't know that this guy has three priors. I didn't know this guy has been to prison four other times. So he's going to be getting a lot more. And if you want to withdraw your plea, I'll allow him to do that, and we'll go, as much as I hate starting over. I could be the judge who just never says anything and just imposes a sentence. But what that does is it makes it difficult for the prosecution and defense to actually come to a resolution on their own. So I try to be as accommodating as possible. But again, if I see something in that pre-sentence investigation that tells me this is a bad actor, then I have to burst the bubble and say,
hey, he's been playing you guys.
Yeah, you're not
or
getting
she.
What you, he or she, yeah, you're not going to get what you want. So sorry.
And you do say in your, when you have your stuff with your plea changes and you do your sentencing, you're like, I do have the right to not go with what you guys made your plea deal on. I have the right to go with this. And you always explain that so they know, like, hey, you could make this decision. You don't always, but
I think my script goes something like, I'm not a party to your agreement. I can sentence you as I see fit. Do you understand?
Sounds about right.
Yeah. I've done it a few times now. Yeah.
But there are some things that you don't have the option of what you sentence them, what they have done. It's a lock stock. This is your sentence, period. And you make that comment like, I don't have a choice. This is what you were charged with. I have to sentence you to this.
Yeah, some sentences are just predetermined by the statute that they violated itself, or in the sentencing statute. It just says, if they're convicted of this, here's a sentence. And I mean, it's kind of nice because I don't have to think too hard. But at the same time, it doesn't leave any leeway for, you know, what we call exigent circumstances. Somebody that was just made a really bad decision once, but they don't have any other record of, you know, that would make you think that they're going to do it again.
Or just weird circumstances around what happened.
Yeah. Like you said, I think you mentioned before, you know, we're human. Yeah, we're human and life's life. You can't plan all of it. There are just things that happen that are just, they don't fit in any box. So I guess being a judge, when you do have the chance to use discretion, you try to, as I say, if I'm confused about what's the right call, go back to those basic principles. What is the best result that's going to end up with the rehabilitation of this person and keep this community safe? So if there's any doubt that one of those two things isn't going to happen, then you got to be maybe more severe than you otherwise would have been.
Is there anything that people don't realize that you have to take into consideration with these decisions? You've talked about their past qualifies into it, but is there anything else that we don't realize, I guess, that you have to take into consideration when you're working through a case entirely and not just in sentencing?
Yeah, so there are so many things that we haven't touched on that are in statutes. They're criminal statute specific, depending on what crime it is. There's all kinds of other considerations. I mentioned the script when taking somebody's plea. I got to tell them all of these things. Those are actually required. Those aren't just my good practice. Those are things that I have to say. Otherwise, they could appeal, and we have to do it all over again if I don't tell them that, either at the time of the plea or at sentencing. So let's say a sexual offense, I have to go over their registration requirements. If there's a theft offense or a breaking and entering, somebody was caused economic harm, I got to hear from the victim advocate as to what the correct restitution amount is. And if it's disputed, we have to have a hearing, and I have to make a determination as to what the proper economic loss is. So it's really fact-specific, case-specific, but on any given day, there's a whole number of things that I might have to consider that I don't consider all the time.
anybody who just thinks you're just up there like coloring while these people are talking, there's a lot that you have to be thinking about through every step of these cases.
Yeah, and actually where I have to think rather quickly is when there is a trial, especially when there's a jury trial. It's very easy when you think they're talking to the jury and they're talking to the witness. I have to listen because at any time there could be an objection or, you know, a witness could have a medical emergency or something. You got to be paying attention to what's going on in the room, and you have to rule on very specific legal objections as to presentation of evidence. So yeah, I can't be coloring. Otherwise, I'm going to have to, we're on the record. We're always on the record. So if I had to say, I'm sorry, could you repeat that? You know, I can't do that. So sometimes I do that because I can't hear them, but.
And yeah, that just comes with, sometimes people don't like to speak loud and some people are just not loud, yeah. Unlike me.
Yeah. Despite, and if you watch the stream at all, every witness that takes a stand, I ask them to speak up and speak into the microphone so that we have a good record. There's so many.
It's hard to be
nerve-wracking, yes, for a witness, because you don't anticipate being in that position and answering questions, and there's the pressure to answer the question correctly. People get very tense and timid. And I will say, having been an attorney and practicing a court of law for a very long time, I was on a witness stand once. And it was the most nerve-wracking thing I've ever been through. I love being the person asking the questions and not the one having to answer them.
I agree completely. Well, we've got one last segment and a lot to learn with Holmes County Common Pleas Judge Sean Warner. I'm Melissa Patrick with Focus Fridays on WKLM. We've got one last segment here with Holmes County Common Pleas Court Judge Sean Warner. I'm Melissa Patrick for Focus Fridays. We still got a lot to learn yet. And one of the things that we haven't mentioned is how a bench trial works and how you judge on that versus having a jury trial.
Yeah, so bench trials are a lot like any other hearing that I have that the jury's not there. So motions to suppress, any motion about the evidence, it's very similar to a bench trial. So depending on whose burden it is, let's say it's the state. The state will put on their witnesses, introduce their exhibits, then the defense will go. And in between all that, there might be a discussion about what exhibits actually are admitted into evidence, and they'll argue about whether it's proper, then I'll make a decision. But there's even more note-taking when it's a bench trial for me, because I am not just the trier of fact, but I'm also ruling on the objections as they're happening. So I write furiously, and my handwriting's terrible. It's not my forte. I prefer the keyboard and clicking and clacking, but that takes away from me listening to the argument. So I have to scribble a lot. And it's funny, if you look at my notes, they'll all be the same. It'll start out, you know, direct examination, cross-examination. I'll make a note as to what exhibit was referred to, whether or not it was admitted. And there ends up being, you know, it's a dozen pages like that for even the most simple bench trial. I will say, I think jury trials are more common, at least in my first term, than full bench trials. There's only been a couple of times. I think we had one arson down at the trailer park that was a bench trial, and maybe two other ones. All the other similar hearings are more just about what evidence is going to be presented at a jury trial.
I mean, why wouldn't you want to count on the jury choosing your side versus a judge? I would take a jury over judge making that decision any day.
Yeah, because you get, you know, variability. If it's a criminal trial, you're going to have 12 people and they have to be unanimous. So if you're, you know, the defense, you just got to
sway that one person.
Yeah, you got a couple of possible favorable outcomes. One is that they all decide you're innocent. That's the best. The other is one person refuses to go along with the rest and it's a hung jury and we got to do it all over again. And then you're getting another bite at the apple. So it's an interesting construct, and it's really set up entirely to protect the rights of defendants. And it's important, you know, to make sure that people aren't arbitrarily convicted. Being a former prosecutor, you know, I always cringe. I think media in general, true crime podcasts, tend to make people think that there's, you know, our prisons are full of innocent people. I strongly doubt that based on my whole experience in my legal career.
Well, and especially this day and age, there's so many more ways to use DNA and everything else. Maybe back in the day where they couldn't run fingerprints through a system and stuff, but today,
yeah, well, especially now that our database is so huge with the DNA, you know, you can match it to so many people now. It grows exponentially every year.
As you're looking at all these cases and things, you have different groups that you are a member, I'm sure of, that if you are unsure of how something is, you can use the group and be like, hey, have you guys ever done this? Are there judges groups that like you're a member of?
Yeah, there are. You know, I mentioned kind of in the training portion we were talking about earlier, there's Ohio Common Pleas Judges Association. There's Ohio Domestic Relations Association. There's a Judicial College. There's probably a couple other ones, but there's also private educators too that, again, if it's a subject that's sort of a niche, then you can go mm-hmm. to those. Going to those, they're generally 2 to 3 day sessions. Mm-hmm. Going to those, I always find the most valuable information is between sessions when you're in the hallway or eating and just talking to, you know, judges from other parts of the state. I'm so curious, you know, I'll say, for instance, you know, hey, I'm from Holmes County. We have a unique county makeup between the English and the Amish. The Amish have an automatic out for jury duty. I'm constantly struggling to seat enough jurors for these very important, you know, matters. What are some of your best practices? And it's great to hear what they're doing. And it could be something more simple than that. Like, hey, do you guys get a lot of these types of cases? What do you think? Oddly enough, we talked about how much I go through my script when somebody's changing a plea mm-hmm. and how many things I have to tell them. I'll be sitting next to a judge from Cleveland and like, oh, we don't have time for that. We have like 500 cases a day. Like, but you got to go through their rights. Like, we'd never get through it if we did all that. So I was like, 88 counties, you know, 88 different ways to do things. You learn that the justice system, say in Cuyahoga County, is very different than it is here. Like here you have one municipal judge, Judge Hyde, one common pleas probate juvenile, that's Judge Lee, and then one general division domestic relations, that's me. In Cuyahoga County, there are 34 of me in the common pleas court. Yeah, and that doesn't even count all the different municipalities and municipal judges they would have up there as well. So the volume itself makes the practice of law look very different up there than it does here. We have the luxury of some time to treat each case like it's important.
As it should be.
Exactly as it should be. Because if you're the person sitting in the chair being accused of something, there's nothing more important to you than that
and
case.
And while they always say your right is to have a speedy trial, you don't want it to be too speedy. You want it speedy at reason. I think we need to reword that. Speedy at reason.
Yeah. Yeah, and that's funny because, you know, the defendant has a right to a speedy trial. It's usually the defendant that will ask for more time because there's, you know, a unique evidence that needs to be examined by his attorney or a number of things, just more time maybe to talk to the prosecutor until they can reach an agreement or something like that. So yeah, it's there to protect them, but obviously I'll grant them additional time as long as I stay within my Supreme Court guidelines. I don't want to be the slowest court in the state. I don't have to be the fastest.
You're like, Judge Warner, what are you doing?
Yeah. I try to look at the surrounding counties, you know, similarly situated counties and stay within, you know, their, it's called overage rate. You know, if you go, and that's another thing that's changing. At the first of the year, the Supreme Court is finally allowing criminal cases to be reported complete within 9 months, which is what your constitutional right is to speedy mm-hmm. trial. But for whatever reason, the Supreme Court was wanting us to move them faster at 6 months. So it was always frustrating when, you know, there's some evidentiary issues to be worked out. So I'm really looking forward to 2026 and when we get that extra 3 months. Because it does move a little slower here in Holmes County. And I honestly don't see any reason why it should move faster. Because, again, it's not the state that's slowing things down. It's usually the defendant asking for more time.
And so as we're kind of starting to wrap up these things, are you involved in the community as we're talking about Holmes County outside of just being in the courtroom? Any boards or committees or anything? Do you feel it important to be in the community doing those things?
Yeah, as of right now, so when I was at both at Critchfield in the private sector and when I was at prosecuting attorney, I was a member of, I've been everything from the Humane Society to the Bar Association to, I can't even list everything that I've done up to now. But now that you're a judge, you're sort of discouraged from participating in things that could come before your court. So being in the Court of Common Pleas, there's a number of things that I'd like to do, but if there's ever litigation, I'd have to get a visiting judge to come in and hear the case. And it costs the county extra money because, you know, they're already paying me a good wage. So I try to avoid those things, but that doesn't mean, you know, I do stuff, you know, with our church, or I am on the Community Improvement Corporation with two guys that you've had in here before, Arnie Oliver and Mark Leininger, and that's a very limited fear of what that does. And they asked me to be on it, and I said, all right, but
if there's ever some things require a judge to need to have a judge handy too.
And I mentioned before, you don't know everything the job entails until it's your job. I didn't realize that the common pleas judge, this is one of those pleasant surprises. I didn't realize that a common pleas judge, every year I appoint someone to the Veterans Commission. I know you've had Dan Stackhouse in here, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and he's doing a great job. But I appoint members of that board every year. So every fall, we solicit, you know, the veterans organizations to put forth a candidate and make a decision. So I've really enjoyed that process and swearing them in and talking to these veterans about their experience, and they really enjoy serving other veterans. So I'm grateful to be attached to that whole process.
Do you have any other boards that you're required to appoint for, or is it just that one?
Just that one that I can think of since you asked me right at the moment.
Well, thank you so much. Is there anything else you want to share before we wrap up?
No, I mean, we're getting close to the holidays, so I just wish everybody happy and safe holidays. And I know it's a lot of extra work for a lot of people, especially you guys here at the radio. And I just want to say I appreciate everything you do for Share a Christmas and bringing that to the county every year and everyone involved.
Well, thank you so much. We love being part of the community, and we love sharing the information about what the great folks in our community are doing. So thanks for joining with us.
Thank you very much.
That was Sean Warner, the Holmes County Common Pleas Court Judge. I'm Melissa Patrick for WKLM's Focus Fridays, which has been brought to you today by Hobrins Insurance, Holmes Siding, Rhodey's IGA, Millersburg Electric, Pomerine Hospital, MRV Siding, and Millersburg Tire. Focus Fridays is each and every Friday in the 9 a.m. hour after hometown news and the Ionna weather forecast. And you can always catch episodes that you missed by going to WKLMFM.com and clicking on the Focus Fridays icon. Focus Fridays shares those who are elected, appointed, and volunteering within our community. In the next episode of Focus Fridays, we welcome school board member Tina Zikafoos here on your hometown radio 95.3 WKLM.